The problem so far is that there is a crisis in general practice. There aren't enough GPs in Ireland. Up to a few years ago, this was sort of a problem mainly sort of in very rural, remote areas. But over the last 5 years, it has crept into the towns. It's creeping into the cities. It's present in Cork City at the moment. There just aren't enough GPs on the ground. We're producing about 200 trainee GPs a year. More than half of them are going away to Canada and to wherever, Canada and Australia. They're not staying around. They're not working. There's a very, very high population of GPs my age, guys over 60, and they're getting out. They're fed up of it and they're just getting out. So we're now left with a situation where soon there won't be enough GPs on the ground to see the amount of people. And as I say, this is a huge problem in Ireland. It's actually a problem in the UK. It's just becoming a sort of a universal problem, really, at the moment. I can see a situation where in about 10 or 15 years' time, there will be no GPs. They'll be gone as a species. They'll be dead.
In terms of what happened here in Youghal, Declan, can you explain the run-up to Dr. O'Brien retiring on the 18th of May, how you viewed it and how you were made aware of the issues surrounding providing a replacement to Dr. O'Brien?
Okay, we knew for quite a while that Deirdre was going to retire. She had sort of forewarned us. She also, by her contract, had forewarned the HSE, would have given them 3 months' notice. The HSE advertised the position. Her medical card numbers were about 380 medical card patients. They advertised the job twice and they had no applicants. So then they were left with a situation whereby they have 380 people and they need to find them a doctor. So we sort of wrote at the time and said, we see what's happening here, but and all the practices in town were united on this. We see what's happening here. We do not have the capacity to take this on. We are all working at absolute full capacity and increasing our workload. And this is not a money issue, and this was never a money issue. This was a patient safety issue. And I think that's important to say. If you increase our workload, you increase everything we do. And if you do that, you make it more likely that we make mistakes.
When were you, you mentioned writing a letter there. When did that happen? And at what stage in the process before the 18th did you know that there was no replacement?
We would have written that letter to the HSC about two and a half months ago. And we would have written it on behalf of our practice. But I know the other practices in town also wrote. We then had a meeting among the six GPs in town ourselves, and we all sort of agreed that, you know, we would not be able to take on the extra capacity. And it's not just a matter of taking on the extra capacity of the 380 medical card patients. You also had to take on her private patients were going to need to be seen as well. So we just felt none of us had the capacity to just suddenly increase our numbers that quickly.
In terms of numbers then, Declan, what did that figure represent to you, and proportionally, how would that add to your workload?
Into our practice alone, it would have been about, we have three partners in our practice, Dr. Maloney and Dr. Martin and myself. So it would mean about 180 extra patients coming into the practice. Now, that's 180 patients that we have to sort of upskill ourselves on. In other words, we've got to get their notes, we've got to look up their histories, look up what medication they're on, look up what allergies they have, and that sort of, and that's a big, big, big workload. And then having done that initially, then we have to just sort of find more space within our daily surgeries to see extra patients.
Wouldn't a large part of that records would be already held by Dr. O'Brien, and wouldn't that be migrated over to you?
It is supposed to be migrated over to us, and the HSE had told us that they were farming it out to some IT company that was going to send those notes to us. They haven't as yet arrived, even though we're looking after Dr. O'Brien's patients. We're into our second or third week doing that now.
Before I ask you a little bit more about your experience with this whole issue, could you give me an insight into the day-to-day operation of a general practitioner? How many patients would you be talking about dealing with every day, and,
okay,
and what that kind of looks like to you?
Yeah, I'll give you my last Monday, okay, which is what, 2 days ago. So my last Monday, I would have seen maybe somewhere between 30 and 40 patients during that day. Right? We give them 10-minute or 15-minute appointments, depending on the doctor. That would have been just patient contact. About half those patients will have had more than one issue. So it takes, people come in and they have a problem, but then they say, and while I'm here, doc, and that can be quite annoying at times. We deal with it, but it does mean it's a lot of patients to be seen. It's a lot of issues to be dealt with. Okay? So that's just patients seen. I would also then have to go through my letters for that day, you know, it was hospital discharge, that sort of thing. And I would have read, I would say, about 40 different letters. I will have to note what in those letters. So, so-and-so has come on from a hospital, had this done and is on these medications. So I have to go to that patient's file and I have to change that to update that file, right? So then my next job will be I will have to download blood tests. I would download, on average, last Monday, I would say 50 or 60 different blood reports. Again, they all have to be gone through. I have to look through them, see if there's anything significant that we need to act on immediately, or see if there's anything we need to act on at some stage. Probably need to contact some of those patients, maybe four or five of them with instant results. Others can wait a little longer.
That sounds to me like a very long day. When would you actually finish, Declan?
I'm not finished even yet on that question. I then have to sit down and do my referral letters. Okay, so if I saw three or four, and in any one day you might have three or four, maybe five referral letters where you need to refer somebody on to a hospital. So you then have to write that letter. You will also have at least two or three requests every day for a letter, for whether it's for disability or invalidity or for whatever. You'll have to do those as well. So there you are. Now we can go on to when do I finish. It varies an awful lot when I finish in the day, to tell you about the truth. It depends on the day. It depends on the time of year. You frequently wouldn't get out of there till about six, quarter to seven.
And what time would you start?
We would start at 9:15 usually. We also, in that period of time, do not get a full hour for lunch. We get our coffee break, but we grab it because we're fairly insistent that we do grab it. So, you know.
What time do you normally stop taking appointments? Because my experience in a GP surgery is that you normally have to wait. You turn up at the time, but usually things have run on at that stage.
Yeah, that's right.
How much overflow is there for you on a day-to-day basis?
I don't think there's ever been a day in a doctor's surgery where everything would run exactly on time, but that's the nature of the job. If you come in to me with sort of, I haven't seen you, we'll say, in the last 10 years, well, I know you're coming with something significant and we're not doing this in 10 minutes. You know, equally, if a child comes in, has a sore ear, you look in the ear, it's a red ear, you prescribe the antibiotic, that might take 2 or 3 minutes. And often it balances out between different consultations. But it's very, very, very difficult to predict the day, and it never runs on time.
So this increase in the number of patients that you deal with, both public and private, is going to significantly add to that burden?
Absolutely. There's no way it can't. And as I say, my main worry, and all the doctors in town main worry, is that something will go wrong. Because if you increase the workload, you increase everything, you increase the dangers of making a mistake. We try our best to always never to make mistakes. But it's human and it's run by humans. They happen.
You would have a role with SouthDoc too, as well as the day-to-day work of the surgery.
Absolutely. And probably one of the areas where we have seen the greatest increase in our workload. A few years ago, the government brought in the under-sixes, free medical cards to under-sixes. Now, I agree totally with free medical cards to under-sixes. I have a daughter who's married in Dublin, who has a large mortgage and 2 children in creches. The last thing she needs is to have to go to a doctor and pay 50 or 60 euros when those children are sick. So I agree totally with it, but it has massively increased our workload. A survey came out of, I think it was Trinity or somewhere last week, which said the visitation for under sixes has increased by 30% to GPs in the last few years. So that's increased our workload hugely. It's also massively increased our workload in SouthDoc. All doctors in the area have to do their time on SouthDoc. That usually would sort of involve maybe about 3 or 4 weekends in the year. But those weekends are horrific. They're absolutely horrific. A weekend in SouthDoc for me involves a Saturday, a 14-hours shift, and a Sunday, the following day, another 14-hours shift. That's on top of having worked my previous week in my surgery and having to work the following week in my surgery. You hardly ever get your lunch break on SouthDoc.
How many people do you think you would see at a weekend at SouthDoc?
At the weekend at SouthDoc?
Given that you see like 40 patients, 30 to 40 every day from 9 till 6:30
in
the surgery.
You would see anywhere between 40 and 70. But there's house calls in the middle of that as well, and that takes time. So the SouthDoc is overburdened. It's absolutely overburdened, you know.
So you're doing like time and a half then at the weekends with this you as are. Well yeah. as your regular.
You are. But if you think of it, like, I'm 64 years of age now. You know, do a 14-hour shift at 64 years of age and do the same again the following day. It's not deliverable. There isn't a European work time directive that would agree to that for anybody. But yet that's what we're expected to do.
So this all kind of feeds in then to you contacting the HSE a couple of months before Dr. O'Brien's retirement. Mm. You wrote to them. What response did they give you?
The response is that they came and met us. They met all six GPs here. We met in my practice, our practice, a few weeks ago, the primary care manager. And he said very politely, he's very sorry, but this is what he has to do. He has a statute right to get all patients who have a medical card a doctor. So he has a right to appoint them to our list. We tried to point out the fact that it was going to increase workload. It was going to increase the probability of mistakes. He had no interest in that. It was of no concern to him. We tried to point out to him that, in fact, what was going to happen to Dr. O'Brien's private patients, because they need to be seen as well. And his answer to that really, really was unusual in the fact that he said, they are of no concern of ours. We only worry about the medical card patients, which makes me think that is it over 50% of the population don't have medical cards. So the HSE don't worry about over 50% of the population. We were shocked when we heard that.
It clearly sounds that enraged you, that response.
That would be a good description of it. It certainly enraged all of us. We were very annoyed, a little bit downtrodden after it. And the fact that we felt like we were banging our head off a wall and getting absolutely nowhere and nobody was listening to us. And the one thing we're all sure of is if we do end up making a mistake and if something does go wrong, the HSE won't back us. We'll be on our own.
Is there any third party then at which you can appeal this decision to?
Not as far as we know. We have a union. We have the IMO, which is our union, and they did ring about it, but they didn't do much. They didn't seem to take much interest in it. You know.
And are the HSE continuing to look for someone to replace Dr. O'Brien?
No, not at all. This is happening in Yall today. The HSE have this problem springing up all over towns, all over the country. And I think they don't have an answer to it. I think they'll have a typical HSE answer to it. It isn't until it's dead and gone that they'll suddenly find that there was a problem. Because they don't seem to do forward thinking. They don't seem to look at what might be coming down the road. They just seem to sort of wait till the crisis happens and then deal with it. Well, the crisis is happening and has been happening for quite a while now. So it's about time they woke up and started looking at it.
You've talked about the feeling with the other GPs in town and the meeting that you've had with them. What is the kind of sense with GPs in the area about this issue?
As I said, this problem exists in Middleton. It exists in Dungarvan. This is not a Yall problem. This is not even an East Cork problem. This is not a County Cork problem. This is a nationwide problem. And I think the feeling, most doctors feel this is an intolerable situation that's happening. There is no GPs in Middleton are signing on new patients. No GPs in Dungarvan are signing on new patients. So the health board's attitude to the private patients in this town, which is they can drive and go see GPs elsewhere, doesn't hold. There's nowhere they can drive to see GPs.
So where is the nearest GP they could go to?
That's a very, very good question. I'd love to know the answer of it because we would give them the name and address.
Having had this meeting with a representative from the HSE and getting the response that you did, has there been any movement between you collectively to address this issue on another platform?
Yeah, funnily enough that you should ask that, there has, because as I explained already the problem we were having with SouthDoc, that we feel that the rota is absolutely onerous and is unsafe in its own right. We took this unusual step, all the general practitioners in the East Cork area, that's 34, 35 of us, that's covering Middleton, Cove, Yall, Killah, Cline, wherever you want to go. We all wrote to 12 local councillors and TDs to sort of explain our dilemma to them. Okay? We got a reply from three. We heard back from David Stanton, TD. We heard from Dermot O'Kiely, a councillor. And we heard from Mary Linehan Foley. And before I go any further, can I say Mary Linehan Foley has been brilliant. She has listened to us. She has been in contact with us on a regular basis, and really we do appreciate it. Now, maybe I'm being naive, but hopefully some of those councillors didn't get their letters, but they were written to their email addresses and they were their correct email addresses. So out of 12 local councillors and TDs, we only heard back from three.
What do you make of that response?
I was really peed off with it, if I can use such a word on radio. And so were all the GPs in the area. It created a very, very bad taste in the mouth for all GPs, all 35 GPs in the East Cork area.
So where do you stand now in your profession in this area? What do you face and what would you like to see happen?
What we face is increasing workload, increasing workload, increasing workload. We will keep seeing our patients. We will keep seeing our patients to the best of our ability. It can be hard at times. And I think sometimes patients can get upset that they can't get to see us exactly when they want, on the exact time or day. And it's not that we're lazy. It's not that we're not seeing people. It's that we just don't have the capacity to see them. And they'll have to bear in mind, we try to put things in place so that if it's an urgent problem, if it's a chest pain, if it's a child in trouble, if it's a rash in a child, they're seen as quickly as possible. But we can't see everything instantly.
You are 64 years of age.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're discussing Dr. O'Brien's departure from practice. Dr. O'Callaghan has departed from practice. Where do you see the future for you?
I still enjoy my job. I still like my job. I still want to keep working my job. Part of me, it's the fear of sort of, what do I do if I'm doing nothing? So I don't, but that's part of the problem. But I actually enjoy the job. I don't enjoy the way it's going. But I still see myself working for another 2 or 3 years.
But what do you think will happen after 2 or 3 years?
Two or three years, I will retire. The town will have possibly 4 GPs left in it for the population. It's undeliverable. It's not going to work.
Do you think they'll replace your position?
I think it's highly unlikely that I'll be replaced. Now, I'm in a partnership, so it will be up to my two partners to replace me. But I
think
that
make it easier
for
you, though?
It can make it easier. It can make it easier. A lot of these problems are more for single-handed practices, but there's still an awful lot of single-handed practices in Ireland.
Finally, where do you think this leaves the patient in all of this? What position is the patient in? We've talked about the issues that you face. What does this mean for the patients of yours?
I think the patients are in a slightly tougher situation in the fact that it's harder to get to see your GP. Now, one area of the Irish Health Service that comes out top every time is general practice when they do surveys and patient satisfaction. And I've often said, you often hear patients giving out about GPs, but it's usually somebody else's GP they're giving out about. They're very seldom giving out about their own GPs. And most patients and GPs have extremely good relationships. And one would hope that that would continue. But it's getting harder and harder and harder to keep it like that.